You're listening to the Broadway Hour on 9:30 a.m. WPAT, and we'll be right back. Brought to you by the Sheraton Hotel and Towers in New York, and DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes. And tonight's program is a special salute, the 25th anniversary of the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y.
To the tune ends, we're dancing in the dark. And it soon ends, we're waltzing in the wonder of why we're here. Time hurries by, we're here and gone, looking for the light of a new love to brighten up the night. I have you, love, and we can face the music together. Dancing in the dark, you are the promised kiss of springtime that makes the lonely winter seem long. You are the breathless hush of evening that trembles on the brink of a lovely song. You are the angel glow that lights a star. The dearest things I know are what you are. Someday my happy arms will hold you, and someday I'll know that moment divine when all the things you my heart, I behold your adorable face, just a song at the start, and it soon is a hymn to your grace. But I always knew I would live life through.
Deborah Trinelli at the microphone, Peter Howard at the piano. And this is the Broadway Hour on WPAT, 9:30 a.m. on the dial, brought to you by the Sheraton Hotel and Towers, and DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes available at fine music stores everywhere. All right, Peter Howard, I got to ask you, they don't write songs like that anymore, do they?
No, they sure don't.
And why don't they?
Why does a loaf of bread cost 59 cents instead of 10 cents? Times are a-changing.
Yeah, but those songs are making a comeback, don't you think? I mean, we have Melissa Manchester who's recorded some of those
songs.
Oh, yes,
quite a bit. Crossover performances, too, by famous opera stars who sing Gershwin and Kern, Kiri Takanawa, and, of course, our show, Crazy for You, is still going strong.
At the Schubert Theater?
Yes, and... there's loads of melody and beautiful, beautiful melodies in The Kiss of the Spider Woman by Kanda Renev. And
you
also,
can't beat those Sheldon Harnick lyrics, and She Loves Me.
Absolutely, and She Loves Me has been having a wonderful renaissance. I saw it again in London, and it's just brilliant, marvelous performance.
I also want to point out to our listeners that Deborah Trinelli can be seen on Law and Order, and you can see, coming up on Law and Order, you can see how beautiful she is.
Yeah.
And right now, I want to introduce Maurice Levine, the musical director of the Lyrics and Lyricists series, and Hadassah Markson of the 92nd Street Y. Welcome to the Broadway Hour.
Thank you.
You're into your 25th year.
Yes.
Cast your mind back 25 years ago and tell us how it all began.
Well, I think that's my job.
Okay. She's not afraid to push herself.
Oh, no, no. Well, it was 25 short years ago that the Billy Rose Foundation, in the guise of Arthur Kantor.
Billy Rose, the great Broadway
that's
producer.
That's right, yeah. Right. Who was also a lyricist. Well, Arthur Kantor came to the Y with some money, and he said, I'd like
that
you to do
helps.
Something about lyricists. And I sort of scratched my head. Well, why do you want to do something about lyricists? He said, well, you know, Billy Rose was a lyricist.
Do we know the famous song he wrote?
I found my $1 million baby in a 5 and 10 cent store and Barney Google. So I was thinking, wow, lyricists, who would want to come and hear lyricists do anything and talk? And I thought and thought, and then I said, I know. I'm going to go to my friend Maurice Levine, who conducts our orchestra here at the Y, and who is a famous Broadway conductor. Surely he'll be able to solve this problem. We'll take this money and do something special with it. And so I called Maurice, and Maurice says, oh, shucks, Hadassah, I don't think people are going to be interested in this stuff, but let me think about it. And about 6 months later, he said, you know, I met with you, Barberg, and we put our heads together, and therein lies the story of lyrics and lyricists.
Now, can you tell me how much money the Billy Rose Foundation gave you to start the project?
Well, for that time, at that period, 25 years ago, $5,000 was like $50,000.
Yes.
So that was seed money to get us started. And the Billy Rose Foundation has been supporting us ever since.
What is your budget now?
Oh, I don't know if I can reveal that.
But it's safe to say a little bit more than $5,000.
I would say it's more than $5,000. And we really have quite an interesting kind of show now. It's taken off and it has many beautiful... It's a mixed media kind of thing with singing and dancing and films and slides, just everything. And that we have to owe... We owe all that to our artistic director, Maurice Levine, who I was so smart to ask to do this job.
We were smart to have on the program today. I'm sorry, Maurice.
I was going to say thank you, Adasta, for that setup.
Yes, right. Well, compliments are going to be flowing all over the place today. Yeah, so, can you tell us about the very first Lyrics and Lyricists concert?
Indeed, I can. Adasta said that I gave it a lot of thought. I did. I felt there was no room for a program about lyric writers, certainly about composers, there would be, but not lyric writers. And I thought and thought. In fact, I remember writing a letter to Hadassah saying, many weeks have passed since you called me. Don't think I'm not interested. I'm just thinking very, very hard.
What was the block for you? What was your problem with lyrics?
Well, the first thing was, I couldn't imagine a program where somebody got on stage and said, I could have danced all night and still have asked for more. Now what do you do? What do you do to follow that?
Right.
This is kind of a little slice of life in the music profession. But I asked a lot of people I knew, many who were my seniors, and saying, I have this offer to do this program. What do you think of it? They all said, that is the worst idea I've ever heard. And I kept getting this, and it was...
Did you get this from lyricists? Did you approach any lyricists?
No, this is the whole point. You hit on the nail on the head. I realized I hadn't asked a lyricist. Then it occurred to me to call Yip Harburg, whose show, Flahuli, I had conducted on Broadway, and we had been good friends, and I called him, and he was the person that really turned it around. We met one afternoon, and Yip is such a genius, and he was telling me things about lyric writing that I thought I knew, but I realized I didn't. And I can just say that we were sitting across to each other at a desk, and the hackles on my neck just went up every time he told me something I didn't expect. And in the process, by the way, he talked about what he called the dime song, obviously Brother King Spirit Dime.
Right.
And he said, where's the effect? I can't quote him exactly. A lyricist doesn't come in on the nose. He comes in from the side. He said, if I had written a song in which a guy, the impression says, I've got tough luck at home. My wife is sick. My kid's coming down with the flu. And so you can spare a dime.
Sounds like a Clifford Odets play.
Yeah, not only that, but my kid's in the hospital with a broken leg. My in-laws are coming, and they're all sick, you know.
Would run one day on Broadway.
Yeah, you never get past 8th bar. But he explained to me that what he had written was the cry of a very loyal American who had done everything that was asked of him by his country. And when it was all over, he had nothing. And that's a lyric.
Hold that thought, Maurice. We've got to go to a break. You're listening to the Broadway Hour on 9:30 a.m. WPAT, and we'll be right back. And this is the Broadway Hour on WPAT, 9:30 a.m. on the dial, brought to you by the New York Sheraton Hotel and Towers. DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes available at fine music stores everywhere. And we are talking to Maurice Levine of the Lyrics and Lyricist series and Hadassah Markson. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You were talking about Yip Harburg.
Yip Harburg. And that meeting must have lasted 4 hours. And I was just transfixed and transported someplace, but it was a wonderful experience. The thought occurred to me, and I think this is where the series was born, so to speak, that if there were an audience sitting behind me and they were as moved and delighted by this, 50% of what my reaction was, we had a great series ahead of us. So I said, Yip, gee, this is great. We're going to start the series and we want you to do the opening show. And he said, oh, no, I'm too old for this. No, I can't be on stage that long. And I made a proposition to him that he would do a bit, and then we would have three Broadway-type performers sing other songs of his, and then we'd come back again. And he finally agreed. And
well, let me interrupt you for a second, Maurice. He was no shrinking violet. I think that Yip saw this as a wonderful opportunity for himself to do a show at the 92nd Street Y with this gorgeous auditorium and with, you know, with every amenity possible. And he never had this chance to do this before in such a grand kind of way. So when Maurice suggested this to him, I mean, this was it. And that's how everybody else came on board, because Yip started the whole thing. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Maurice, but I just did want to say that about Yip.
Okay.
Those Broadway guys know an opportunity when they see one.
I said to him, Yip, now that you're going to do the program, you know who I would like to have on the program with you on the series? Johnny Mercer. He said, well, why don't you ask him? Yeah, I said, I don't know the man. He said, well, here's his number. Call him, tell him I set the call. I did, and Johnny agreed. And the next person I went to is with us today, that was Sheldon Harnick.
Mm-hmm.
And we know this about Sheldon, that one of his idols was Yip Harburg. So the idea of appearing in the same series with him obviously appealed to him. He did a wonderful, wonderful program.
And they would all get up and they would tell the audience how they write lyrics, which I've never understood, how one could do that. It's a mystery to me.
This observation is a little after the fact, but what those evenings had was a sense that we were spending an evening at the home of the lyricist, and we were invited in. It was like a parlor evening. And it was like being on the inn. I do know this, I'll just quickly throw this in, that the reviews of that first program were beyond what anybody ever thought of. John Lauren, the Village Voice, wrote a 2-page review. And there were...
Actually, that Yip Harburg evening is sort of a rather famous evening in the history of the musical theater. I remember when I was at Columbia University, a professor I had talking about the Yip Harburg lecture at the 92nd Street Y years ago.
Well, you know, Mike, we didn't think we were going to have such a large audience. We had really planned to do that in the little art gallery next door to the Kaufman Concert Hall. But then we saw that very night we had to switch rooms, locations, to the big concert hall, because the lobby was just jammed with people, and we didn't have reserved seats. So after that whole year, people were lining up in the halls and around the corner on 92nd Street to get good seats in the front. But we were sold out that very, very first year.
Now, over the years, have there been any lyricists who have turned down a request to appear at the series? Or
not really? No. I will say this, that at the end of 12 years, we ran out of lyricists who might be right for this. There are many people, many fine lyricists who have three or four hit songs, but that would not be enough for us. We needed people who had a body of work.
And you stuck mainly with Broadway lyricists, or did you do Hollywood?
No, it started out that way, and then we covered the whole scene, Hollywood. Even went to, had a program one night with Nashville country writers. And but at the end of the 12th season, we did have to switch our format to scripted shows.
Great. Well, we've got to go to a break in a minute, but I want to you to tell our listeners, if they're interested in getting on a list or getting tickets to the series, how do they go about doing that?
Well, they'd have to call the Y, the box office, and 996-1100.
That's 212-996-1100 for
that's
the
right.
Lyrics and Lyricists
series. Those tickets are hard to get, but there's still a few left. So
and what's the next program coming up?
The first one, the opening program, Alan and Marilyn Bergman.
Wrote one of my favorite scores, Ballroom, by the way.
I've always liked that score. Yes.
Maurice Levine, Hadassah Markson from the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y. Thank you so much for being with us on the Broadway Hour.
Thanks so much.
And we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to the Broadway Hour here on WPAT, 9:30 a.m. on the dial, brought to you by the Sheraton Hotel and Towers, and DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes available at fine music stores everywhere. And now we have a song written by the lyricist Sheldon Harnick, who's with us, The Merry Little Minuet from the musical Two's Company.
There are days in my life when everything is dreary. I grow pessimistic, sad, and world-weary. But when I am tearful and fearfully upset, I always sing this merry little minuet. They're rioting in Africa. They're starving in Spain. There's hurricanes in Florida. And Texas needs rain. The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate Yugoslavs, South Africans hate the Dutch, and I don't like anybody very much. In faraway Siberia, they freeze by the score. An avalanche in Switzerland just got 15 more. But we can be tranquil and thankful and proud, for man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we know for certain that some lovely day someone will set the spark off and we will all be blown away. They're rioting in Africa. There's strife in Iran. What nature doesn't do to us will be done by our fellow man.
The Merry Little Minuet with lyrics by Sheldon Harnick, also performed by Sheldon Harnick. And Sheldon Harnick, you all know, is the lyricist to Fiddler on the Roof, She Loves Me, and one of my favorite shows, The Rothschilds. Sheldon Harnick, welcome to the Broadway Hour.
Thank you.
Now, you got to correct us on something I said earlier. The Merry Little Minuet is not from Two's Company. It's from something else.
It was from John Murray Anderson's Almanac.
What was that?
That was a review which introduced Hermione Gingold. And
is that the one where she played the cello in that? Was that the...
Yeah. And the song was performed by Orson Bean in that.
Now, what were you doing when you got that gig? That job writing, how did you get that job writing?
Well, the song came before there was any use for it. I was sitting at home reading the newspaper and kind of groaning every time I turned the page, very much like today. And at a certain point, I was so depressed that I started to laugh. And I thought, it is so awful. That's all you can do is laugh. And I, for
what
some,
was it in the paper then that was?
In the early 50s, who knows? Just think backwards. Just keep the events of today in mind and think backwards, and it was the same thing. And I thought, I'd like to put this into song form. In fact, I think I started with a phrase from something I was reading, the rioting in Africa, ha, 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 ha. And I saw, I at the time, like Maurice Levine, I used to be a violinist. I was playing a lot of chamber music at the time, so that the sound of Haydn minuets were in my head. And I started writing the song along those lines. At a certain point, I realized that the ha, 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 ha was too hard to sing, and I changed it to a whistle. And in those days, I had all my teeth, and I was a very good whistler. But those days and those teeth are long gone.
You did not start off, I think you once told me, wanting to be a lyricist. You wanted to be a violinist, a musician, a composer, was it?
Well, by the time I came to New York in 1950, I knew that I was not going to be a violinist. But I thought at the time I would like to be a composer-lyricist. And as a matter of fact, you mentioned Yip Harburg. I had an introduction to Yip through a classmate of mine from Northwestern, Charlotte Ray. And Yip gave me what turned out to be wonderful advice. He said, at the time, he said, there seem to be fewer competent theater lyricists than there are composers. So he said, you will do yourself a favor, you will facilitate your career if you agree to write with other composers beside yourself. And that turned out to be true. In no time at all, I found a number of different people to work with, and it all paid off when I met Jerry Bock some years later.
And the first show you did with Jerry Bock was?
The first show we did was called The Body Beautiful.
The Body Beautiful. Now, did you also contribute lyrics to, at the time, there was popularity of cabaret and revues, which don't seem to be around much anymore, but I know a lot of musical theater people got their start by providing special material for, I don't know, maybe someone like a Charlotte Way or Kay Ballard, perhaps, who was one of those shows.
Kay bought a song that that I had written while I was at Northwestern, and but I didn't want to write special material. I didn't feel that I really was good at it. I thought it was a detour from the direction I wanted to go. So I didn't do that. But luckily, I hadn't been in New York that long, about 2 years, when I had a song in New Faces of 1952, sung by Alice Ghostly. It was a song called The Boston Begin, which was an extremely successful song in the show. And it opened the door so that while there were still revues on Broadway, which only lasted about 4 or 5 years more, I had songs and a couple of those, and then an off-Broadway reviews, and I was able to make a living more or less up until I met Jerry Bock.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all stopped.
those lean years of Fiddler on the Roof and
right.
some of those shows, I know how difficult it is. Speaking of Fiddler on the Roof, we all know the lyric, If I Were a Rich Man. How'd you come up with that line?
I think it's almost literally from Shalom Aleichem.
So inspired by the material you based the musical on.
Well, yes. The stories of Shalom Aleichem became our Bible, one of our two prime sources for that show. And there is a short story. The title, maybe, I don't remember precisely, but it's got a title like If I Were a Rich Man. It was about a school teacher, you know, who wanted to be. Also, Tevye, quite frequently in his internal musings, will say, if only I were a rich man, I could marry my daughters properly, I could do this, I could do that. And so that the phrase was in my head. But what happened was Jerry Bock and I went to a benefit given for the Hebrew Actors Union. It was downtown someplace. We went because we were looking for people who we thought might be useful in the show. And we did find Zvi Schuller, who became the innkeeper. But at one point, a mother and daughter came out and did a Hasidic song, which was all thirds and sixths, and there were no lyrics. It was just a chant. And since it was a chant, it was appropriate that we were, ha-ha, enchanted. So the next morning, Jerry called me and he said he couldn't get that notion out of his head, and he'd written something. So I went over and he played it for me, and it was a yada da da dum bum. And we thought, and Jerry sang it with those kind of syllables, and we thought, let's construct it in such a way that we preserve the syllables, the nonsense syllables. And so that's how that came about.
Terrific. Sheldon Harnick, on the Broadway Hour. We got to go to a break, but we'll be right back. We'll keep talking to you, and we're going to bring on the Broadway composer, John Kander.
You can relax with a cappuccino or espresso right here at the Sheraton New York's Lobby Court Lounge and 53rd Street Bar. It's designed to help you relax in the heart of Midtown. The Lobby Court also features an array of cocktails and spirits, beers, wines, brandies, and waters. The Lobby Court presents piano entertainment featuring the fabulous fingers of Irving Fields, who's been a guest on this show. He'll be playing the Steinway here right at the Sheraton Tuesdays through Saturday evenings. The Lobby Court Lounge and 53rd Street Bar is located at 53rd and 7th Avenue in the lobby of the Sheraton New York Hotel.
And we're back on the Broadway Hour, heard on WPAT 930 AM on the dial, brought to you by the New York Sheraton Hotel and Towers and DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes. Special show devoted to the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y tonight. And we have with us now the lyricist Sheldon Harnick and the Broadway composer John Kander, both of whom have appeared several times, I gather, at the Lyrics and Lyricists series. John Kander, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you. I've only appeared once because I'm just too terrified. just too scared.
Do you sing or do you accompany someone?
I accompany my very talented performer partner, who happens to be a lyricist. His name is Fred Ebb.
Yes, John Kander and Fred Ebb, I'm sure you all know, wrote the scores to Cabaret, Zorba, and the wildly successful Kiss of the Spider-Woman, now in its third year on Broadway?
I guess we're approaching the end of our second year.
End of your second year, and you've got a tour out around the country with,
yes, with Cheetah Rivera.
Mm-hmm. Right, great. I want to ask both of you this question from the composer standpoint and then from the lyricist standpoint. Which comes first, the music or the lyrics?
Well, as Jerry Bach once said, the book.
That's correct.
It depends. It all depends on the way people choose to work. I've worked with people like Joe Raposo, who wanted the lyrics first, all the lyrics, and then he would write the music. And I've worked with people like Cy Coleman and Marvin Hamlisch briefly, who prefer to do the music first if possible.
In our situation, it's neither. We work in the same room at the same time, and I improvise, and Fred improvises, and he can improvise in rhyme and meter the way I can at a piano. And with a very few exceptions, almost everything we've written has been written that way. We build it together.
You're shaking.
When Sheldon first told me years ago that he preferred having the music come to him first. I didn't see how that was possible. So everybody works differently.
You were shaking your head there for a minute, Sheldon, about when he was describing the way he works.
Well, I think incapable of that kind of improvisation. I would have to be very drunk, and then it would come out in glossolalia, I think. But I'm just amazed to hear that the two of you have that gift.
It's much easier for a composer to have it than for a lyricist. I have to interrupt to say that the writing Africa that you played earlier is a piece which Fred is constantly pointing to you young writers as to a kind of model of special material writing.
What in your minds is the key to a good lyric? What should a good lyric do for a song or for the moment in the show, for the audience?
Well, as Sigmund Romberg said, it should fit the notes.
Easy to overlook those basic things, right?
To a certain extent, it depends what kind of a song it is, whether it's, if you say a theater lyric, that's one thing. If you say a pop lyric, that's something else. If you say a rap lyric, that's still something, a third thing. In the theater, at any rate, a lyric in a book show should reflect the situation that the character is in, who sings it. It should be consonant with the dialogue that the book writer has written, so that there's no jarring change when the performer begins to sing after speaking. it should be concise, it should be immediately comprehensible by an audience, because unlike poetry, they can't stop and go back and say, what was that verse again? Hopefully the craft of it, the rhyming, if the writer chooses to rhyme, should be precise and inventive, and it should be singable. It should fit the music in such a way that phrases don't end with consonants that are hard to sing. There are all those things. And then on top of that, it should be as fresh an approach to language as possible.
Mm-hmm. In addition to that, at least in our experience, a song will replace often 5 pages of dialogue, so that the lyric, and we both worked with Joe Stein. Mm-hmm. And
the book writer?
Yes, and we're working with him again at the moment. And he's used to that fact. He will hand us a scene that he knows is way too long and grit his teeth knowing that he's going to have to give up five or six of his favorite pages into lyrics.
Yeah, Peter Stone says the book writer is the one who always gets shafted during the writing of the show.
Well, especially because one of a lyricist's talents is that he has to be an expert thief. He has to look at what the book writer hands him and pick out all the plums that have been given to him as dialogue, and then readjust them and use them as lyrics, and then he gets the credit, and the book writer doesn't.
Right, and the critic always blames the failure of any show on the book writer.
Just right.
Right, and now I asked Sheldon about the creation of If I Were a Rich Man. I want to ask you if you could sort of take us through how you and Fred Ebb came up with the title song to Cabaret, which, of course, we all know.
Well, it was not to be in the show originally, I remember. And I think we spelled cabaret with a K at that point.
That's not how it's spelled.
I'm trying to think of the genesis of this. I think we had written a lot of the material for the show, and under very strict surveillance from Hal Prince, our director. And we kind of just wanted to cut loose with a song which summarized a lot of Sally Bowles' character. And we wrote this song very fast, and we liked it a lot, and we brought it to Hal, who said never. And Ron Field, who was the choreographer, said, now wait a minute, play that again. And ultimately it was in the show, but it was an attempt on our part to write a full version of the character of Sally Bowles when, in fact, she only had 3.5 scenes in the whole show.
Right, right. Actually, we remember that character from that song, I think.
That's well, that's correct, because she doesn't really spend much time on the stage.
Yeah, but the great thing about that song is the concision of telling you all about this woman in 2 minutes and 40 seconds.
That was the idea.
Yeah, yeah. We're here on the Broadway Hour with lyricist Sheldon Harnick and Broadway composer John Kanter, and we'll be right back. And we're back on the Broadway Hour, heard on WPAT, 9:30 a.m. on the dial, brought to you by the Sheraton Hotel and Towers in New York, and DRG CDs and Chrome cassettes. And tonight's program is a special salute, the 25th anniversary of the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y. We're talking to composer John Kanter and lyricist Sheldon Harnick. You said you appeared at Lyrics and Lyricists one time and you were very nervous. Can you tell us about that experience?
Well, it wasn't the... It wasn't an experience that was peculiar to Lyrics and Lyricists. I really hate to perform in public. It scares me to death, and it's gotten worse as I've gotten older. It all started back in college when I was playing a show that I had written.
Where'd you go to school?
Oberlin. And between the matinee and evening performance, I had one drink. I certainly was not high or anything like that. And I was playing the show that night, and it changed my concentration, and I started... Now, I've played the piano since I was 4 years old. Keyboard is a friend of mine. And I started feeling, how do I know I want to push that thing down? And how do I know that I'm going to push down next? And I froze. My hands froze on the keys for just a split second. It was a terror that I have never gotten rid of. And On occasion, I do have to perform, and I always feel that it takes about a month off of my life. But Lyrics and Lyricists was a wonderfully successful experience for us, and Fred was just smashing.
I know Fred a little bit, and he's a bit of a ham. He loves to get up there and belt them out.
What really makes me sore is that he gets up there and tells the audience how frightened he is.
and then proceeds to
wipe them away because he's such a terrific performer, and I'm sitting there looking as if I'm cool as a cucumber, and I'm dying inside.
Now, how many times have you performed at the
my own Lyrics and Lyricists program once, but Maurice has invited me to be a guest on a number of other occasions. The last one I was there was for Songs of Lerner and Lowe, and I was kind of the host, or at least the MC. I introduced everybody else on the program. So I'm a friend of Lyrics and Lyricists, and I work cheap.
Don't tell your agent that. We just have a couple of minutes to go. I want to ask you a question, both of you. Is the art of writing lyrics dying out? I mean, the Phantom of the Opera, Miss Saigon, these giant British pop operas that have invaded Broadway, it seems to me the least important thing about them is the lyric, are the lyrics.
To answer the question, I don't think the art of the lyricist is dying out. Like John, I serve on a number of panels, which introduces me to the work of some of the younger people, and some of them are wonderfully gifted. What is dying out is a plethora of musicals where people can learn their craft. You know, it's just gotten so expensive that there aren't enough musicals, there aren't enough flops, so which can then produce a lot of hits.
You learn from a flop.
Yeah.
To continue with that, Sheldon and I are part of the last generation of songwriters who were allowed to fail and could come back the next day and still have
their
work.
Yeah, it's hit or miss now on Broadway.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, go ahead. You were going to say?
Flora the Red Menace opened and got bad reviews, and Hal Prince said the next day, it doesn't matter whether it does well or not, we'll start to work on the next show, and the next show was Cabaret. Now, I don't think that could happen so easily to a young writer today.
And the same was true with Jerry Bach and myself. We did The Body Beautiful. It was a big flop, and then we did Fiorello, which was a hit.
Yeah. Speaking of Flora the Red Menace, we are now going to hear a John Cantor song, A Quiet Thing, with lyrics by Fred Ebb.
When it all comes true, just the way you planned, it's funny, but the bells don't ring. It's a quiet thing when you hold the world in your trembling hand. Think you'd hear a choir sing. It's a quiet thing. There are no exploding fireworks. Where's the roaring of the crowds? Maybe it's the strange new atmosphere way up here among the clouds, but I don't hear the drum, and I don't hear the band. The sounds, I'm told, such moments bring. Happiness comes in on tiptoe. What do you know? It's a quiet thing, a very quiet thing. Happiness comes in on tiptoe.
Well, what do you know? It's a quiet thing, a very quiet thing.
And that was A Quiet Thing from the John Kander Fred Ebb musical, Flora the Red Menace, and I think I recognize that voice. And that was you performing at the Lyrics and Lyricists series.
Yes, with my hands trembling and the sweat pouring off of my face.
You couldn't hear it. Sheldon Harnick, thank you very much for being with us today. John Kander, we thank you as well.
Thank you.
And now Hadassah Markson from the 92nd Street Y is headed over here to tell us about the next Lyrics and Lyricists series. And here you are.
Here I am.
Okay, so what can we expect at Lyrics and Lyricists this year?
Well, the first program is going to feature Alan and Marilyn Bergman, and then we're going to be doing on the second one, remembering Julie, of
course. Julie
Stein. Julie Stein.
Who will be performing at these?
Maurice, would you like to tell them who's going to perform on that?
In the program of the Bergmans. They have invited two singers to be part of their program, and they are Sandy Stewart and Nancy Lamott.
And, oh, she's wonderful, Nancy Lamott.
Yes, and the Mike Renzi Trio will be the musical force in that show. On the that's in January 22nd. That'll open the season. February 26th and 27th is our second program, and we decided to do a program called We Remember Julie to acknowledge and pay tribute to him. And actually, at this moment, I cannot tell you it will be in that show. And that's the very nature of what we do. There's a great reservoir of performers in this town, luckily. Mm-hmm. And many of them are veterans and been on the Lyrics any number of times. And I'll have to put that show together.
You've got your work cut out for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's a lot of songs to go through.
Right.
Julie Stein.
And quite a life he had. You know. Yeah.
And after Julie Stein, you have
then
more?
Then comes Charles Strauss.
No, not quite. No?
No? Oh.
No, April 9th and 10th will be an evening with Burton Lane. And then May, I think it's 6th and 7th, I'm not sure, it will be an evening with Charles Strauss.
Charles Strauss, who was supposed to be on our show today, but unfortunately couldn't make it. Yeah. Wonderful composer, though. Oh, marvelous composer.
Right. And our final, we do five a year. And our final program is kind of special. We're calling it the L&L anniversary, 25th anniversary party.
Huh?
And what I hope to do is invite just a bunch of people who've given us some great moments over the past 24 years. So that's the season.
That's great.
I want to add one thing, that we're looking into the future beyond our 25 years. And I do believe they're beginning to write songs like they used to. I would contradict Peter just a little bit, because last year we started a new program called The New Breed. And we had Craig Carnelia on it, and Francesca Blumenthal, Bobby Green, and David Friedman, and Brad Ross. And it was an exciting, wonderful concert given by young lyricists and composers. And next year we hope to integrate many people from The New Breed, young people, into our series. And that's really what's
all
coming up.
All inspired by the Lyrics and Lyricists series.
That's right.
Terrific.
For the future.
I want to hear some music. Peter Howard at the piano with Deborah Trinelli.
Well, I'm going to do one of the most memorable performances of the Lyrics and Lyricists this past season was Mitchell Parrish. And Mitchell Parrish, who wrote Stardust with Hokey Carmichael, Deep Purple with Peter Rose, Sophisticated Lady with Duke Ellington. And here's the song that I did at the 92nd Street Y with music by Sammy Fain. If you've got your bread and butter and a suit of clothes to wear, wealthy, schmelthy, as long as you're healthy, brother, you're a millionaire. If the sock that you've been buying isn't worth a dime a share. Wealthy, schmealthy, as long as you're healthy, brother knows you give a care. The best things in life are free, the sun and the moon above. It don't need a treasury to fall in love. If you've got a little sweetie, and she tells you that it's yeah. Wealthy, schmealthy, as long as you're healthy, brother, you're a millionaire. Take your vitamins A, B, C, D, E, get a lot of good health care. Because wealthy, schmealthy, as long as you're healthy, brother, you're a millionaire. Thank you. Now, Deborah, we're doing a Rodgers and Hart show. And, of course, Rodgers and Hart has been celebrated at the 92nd Street Y Lyrics and Lyricists. And we are going down to Florida with a nice show starring Julie Wilson. And let's do one chorus of Manhattan. I'll take Manhattan,
the Bronx and Staten Island too. It's lovely going through the zoo.
East side, west side, all around the town.
It's very fancy on old Delancey Street, you know. The subway charms us so, where balmy breezes blow to and fro. And tell me what street compares with Mott Street in July? Sweet push carts gently sliding by. The city's clamor can never spoil the dreams of a boy and girl.
We'll turn Manhattan into an island of joy. Thank you.
Thank you. Peter Howard at the piano, Deborah Trinelli at the microphone. We've been celebrating the marvelous contributions of the Lyrics and Lyricists series at the 92nd Street Y. They have a terrific program lined up, so I hope you'll all rush to your phones and call the 92nd Street Y and get your tickets to the Lyrics and Lyricists series of 1995. And now we've got two trivia questions for our listeners. If you get both questions right, you're going to win two tickets to a Broadway show or an off-Broadway show. It'll be determined in the future, plus dinner here at the New York Sheraton Hotel and Towers. So listen up. Here are the trivia questions. John Kander's first musical was called Family Affair. It was not written with his lyricist partner, Fred Ebb. If you can name the two famous brothers who wrote the lyrics and the book to John Kander's first musical, Family Affair, you will get, I think Maurice Levine knows it, he's got it. There are two famous brothers, both went on to become very famous writers, and they wrote John Kander's first musical, Family Affair. Our second question, Sheldon Harnick, also a guest here, contributed the lyrics to a Dutch musical that was on Broadway last year. If you can name what that musical, a Dutch musical was, to which Sheldon Harnick contributed lyrics, and you can also get the name of the brothers who wrote A Family Affair with John Kander, you will win two tickets to a Broadway or off-Broadway show, plus dinner at the New York Sheraton Hotel and Towers. And we just want our listeners to know that this special tribute to Lyrics and Lyricists, this special edition of the Broadway Hour, is going to be donated to the Museum of Television and Radio here in New York. And we thank Ken Mueller from the Museum of Television and Radio for making that possible.
They bought Cabaret for the movies. Now, there was a quiet thing. And we had a song in the original Broadway show that was a money song, which Joel Grey got to sing by himself. But the thinking was, in the making of the movie, and probably quite right too, that the audience would like to see Liza and Joel sing together. But they wanted to retain the idea. They wanted it to still be about money, but a duet. And we had more fun writing this song than any other song I can remember our having written. And we called it just that. Money.
Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, it makes the world go round. A mark, a yen, a buck, or a pound, a buck, or a pound, a buck, or a pound is all that makes the world go around. That clinking, clanking sound can make the world go round.
money, 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 money.
If you happen to be rich and you feel like a night's entertainment, you can pay for a gay escapade. If you happen to be rich and alone and you need a companion, you can ring for the maid. If you happen to be rich and you find that you're left by your lover, though you moan and you groan quite a lot, you can take it on the chin, call a cab, and begin to recover on your 14-carat yacht. What? Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, of that we both are sure, on being poor.
Money, 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 money.
When you haven't any coal in the stove and you freeze in the winter and you curse to the wind at your fate. When you haven't any shoes on your feet, your coat's thin as paper and you look 30 pounds underweight. When you go to get a word of advice from the fat little pastor, he will tell you to love ever more. But when hunger comes to rap, rat-a-tat, rat-a-tat, at the window, see how love flies out the door. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around, the clinking, clanking sound of money, 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 money. Get a little money, 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 money. Mark a yen, a buck or a pound, that clinking, clanking, clunking sound. It's all that makes the world go round, it makes the world go round.
And that brings us to a close of the Broadway Hour. I'm Michael Riedel of the Daily News, filling in for my colleague Larry Sutton, also of the Daily News, who will be back next week. We want to thank Peter Howard at the piano, Deborah Trinelli at the microphone, Maurice Levine from Lyrics and Lyricists, Hadassah Markson, also from the 92nd Street Y, lyricist Sheldon Harnick, and my good friend, Broadway composer John Kander. Special thanks to Chris Breitveld, our sound man, Kate McGrath, our executive producer, and Krista Altaktasa. I hope I got her name right. Krista Altaktasa, who helped us organize this tribute to the Lyrics and Lyricists series. And this is Michael Riedel saying so long from the Great White Way.